All right. I'm ready. Are you ready? Do you have your notes up?
I'm ready. They're up.
All right.
Oh, God. I just looked at some of the pictures in this to make me really fucking angry.
Why?
You'll see. We'll get there.
Okay. I'm excited. I'm excited to have a bad time.
Yeah, I don't know. This might be one where we have very differing opinions on this.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see. Let's keep moving.
Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. What's going on, Max?
Just doing some stretching. I don't know why I told you I was ready to record and then stretched a whole bunch.
Well, but I figured you were ready after your push-ups and your jumping jacks. I'm sitting here setting up the laptop and the microphone. I mean, you did put this bed sheet up, but you also did a few rounds of jumping jacks and push-ups.
Well, don't forget there's three towels on my door as well.
Yeah. You might have to pull one of those down and wipe off your sweaty brow after all that exercise you've been doing. If you're not ready now, then when, Max?
Now.
Okay. Now we're ready. Podcast start. Welcome to Pretty Dead Boys.
How you doing? You doing good?
Yeah. I'm swell. I'm ready to fucking end this year. Let's kill it.
Yeah, this will be the last one of the year. Yeah. Goodbye, 2018.
Yeah, good fucking... I don't actually have any kind of strong feelings about any particular year. I feel like that's a weird thing that we get into as a culture. We're like, 2018 was the worst. Let's go 2019. Because you know what we said last year? 2017 was the worst.
We had like a bad three-year run.
Yeah.
I had a lot of great things happen, and this has been a great year. I'm trying to figure out how to not just be, like, tired at a lot of the shitty things that are happening.
Yeah, but when you look, out at the world and you see what's happening, there's a lot to be depressed about. But let's all remember that Super Smash Bros. Ultimate came out this year, and that it's a very good game. And that's what's going to bring the people together. Did you hear that story about, I forget where it was, but there are these guys playing Super Smash Bros. It wasn't even really that loud, but they got a noise complaint. The cops came and just hung out and played Super Smash Brothers with them.
That should be more of what cops do. It's just like being like, yeah, you're not really causing a big issue. I don't know. Let's hang out.
There are lots of officers of the law out there who do that kind of building bridges with the community.
Yeah.
And I love when that stuff makes headlines. And I love Super Smash Brothers. So 2019, more Smash Brothers, more love.
Get those small actionable steps out there.
Yeah. That's the platform I'm standing on for my presidential run.
Also, 2019, get a bottle of isopropyl alcohol, like really strong stuff, and spray it on your car to get rid of the ice.
Oh.
It's great. It rules.
That works.
Yeah, I started doing it this year, and I've only had to do it once so far.
Wow, because you know...
it's really nice.
I'm going to try that because you know that scraping the windshield is my least favorite sound in the world.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's right up there with rubbing two pieces of styrofoam together where I just want to die when I hear it. Yeah. It's awful.
We should move. Get out of this state. So, Dorian, I was thinking about a topic for this episode, and I realized that we kind of cover vultures a lot.
Sure.
We cover vultures quite a bit. Now, I don't like birds. I think they're awful, and they're dirty, and that they have a lot of disease, and I don't like how their heads move, and I don't like their eyes, and I don't like thinking about talons, and I don't like that thing penguins have in their mouth. You know? Have you seen that? They have, like, spikes in their mouth. It's terrible.
Oh. Well, all of this is very disrespectful to my favorite group of animals, but go ahead. I'm listening.
Birds are shitty. But I was thinking about how horrifying birds are and how much we've covered them on the show with sky burials and towers of silence and everything.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very good thing, and I love it.
So I thought that it's ironic that I have this bird staring at me from my arm.
Yeah, you got a bird tattoo. You brought this upon yourself.
So I thought that we should broaden our scope a little bit and take a look at some of the other weird and cool things that happen with animal death. And I know you're probably thinking that we're going to be doing a lot of taxidermy talk.
Hmm.
Well, there is a lot of that. But I also have some other stuff that's very weird that I am very, very excited for you to find out about.
Hell yeah. I love animals, and I love learning about death. Let's get into it.
So in honor of this topic, I bought some animal-based seltzer.
What?
Not like blood, animal blood. It's just animal-based because of the brand. So without further ado, here's the Pre-Dev Boys Cracking of the Topic moment, this time brought to you by Polar Seltzer Orange Cream.
Orange vanilla. Let's explore.
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of like that. It's kind of a creamsicle.
Yeah.
That's actually really good.
That's remarkable, actually.
Shout out to everyone who is yelling at us for drinking LaCroix, telling us it was nasty, and telling us we need to drink Polar instead. I'm pleasantly surprised by this.
Yeah, this rocks, actually. There's no juice, no sodium, no sugar. Damn.
Calorie free.
Hell yeah. This rocks. So, first off, let's revisit some of our old friends, mummies, and we'll talk about some animal mummies for a little bit. So the process of animal mummification didn't come around until hundreds of years after human mummification. This was mostly due to how cost prohibitive it was to mummify a person. So, like, imagine this. You, Dorian, are an Egyptian priest.
I like this.
Okay. You have been tasked with mummifying the king.
Hmm.
So it's still early in the history of mummification, and you don't really have the process quite down pat yet.
Sounds on brand.
Yeah. So if you mess up mummifying the king or queen, you're going to be haunted by their ghost that you did a bad job of making for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's not a good look.
No.
So if those are the stakes, you're probably not really going to be fooling around and trying to mummify animals when you have to focus super hard on getting people down.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's why animal mummification took a couple hundred years to come around after people mummification did.
Right. They were focusing on the craft.
Yeah. Honing their work.
Yes.
However, as mummifying became a more streamlined process, folks got more and more comfortable with mummifying animals, even if the process looked a little different than that of mummifying a person. A lot of animals might have different internal systems than people, and things worked a little differently, and the Egyptians would mummify, like, crocodiles and things like that.
Hmm.
So, you know, they had to experiment a little bit to get everything down pat. Now, one might assume that animal mummification started for religious reasons, but that one would be a dummy and be wrong.
Idiot.
You fool. You know what happens when you assume.
You make an ass.
Sometimes you're wrong.
Oh. Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's my favorite joke to make it work. Does I say it to old people a lot?
Yeah.
Because I go, I guess I just assumed. And you know what happens when you assume, and sometimes they like look at me a little quizzically, and I just go, sometimes you're wrong.
That's it?
Yeah.
What a tease. I hate that. I don't know if it was like what you just did with me where you get me to say the word ass.
So ancient Egyptians really liked animals.
Yeah.
They were big animal people. It was cool.
Some of them were literally big animal people.
That is true. There's a lot of statues of that.
Yes.
So here's a little excerpt that describes the high level of regard that ancient Egyptians held for animals.
Throughout the history of ancient Egypt, animals were highly respected. In no other culture have animals been as influential in so many aspects of life. Nor has any culture depicted animals as often in their artwork or writing. It is estimated that 20 to 25% of Egyptian hieroglyphics relate to animals. Egyptians believed that the animals were crucial to both physical and spiritual survival, vital to physical survival because they were a major source of food, and to spiritual survival, based on how well a person treated animals during their life on Earth. In order to determine a person's admittance or denial to the afterlife, the gods would ask a series of judgment questions. One of these crucial questions would be whether they had mistreated any animals during their life on Earth. Because of this religious belief, the killing of an animal was considered a serious crime, punishable by death. Diodorus Siculus, a Greek historian from the 1st century BC, witnessed the lynching of a Roman who had accidentally killed a cat during a visit to Egypt. Understandably, this punishment frightened many Egyptians to the point that if one would happen upon a dead animal, they would flee from it as to avoid the accusation of being its killer.
Yeah, they were, again, big animal folks.
For sure.
Which is cool, you know, and it makes a lot of sense that they show up in their writing a lot and in statues. You introduce things to your culture that you care about and you value, you know?
Yeah.
Until modern culture came along, the ancient Egyptians probably treated their pets better than any other culture in history as well. Pets were sacred to them. You know the saying, all dogs go to heaven?
Yeah.
That very scary movie that creeped me out as a kid? I didn't like it.
I don't remember much from it. Was it scary?
Yeah, it was like one of those things that looked like a Disney movie, but was made by like a really dark movie theater. Or
yeah,
movie,
I think
movie
that's,
studio?
Yeah, that's a Don Bluth production. Don Bluth did Secret of Nim and a lot of kind of admittedly creepy looking animated movies in the 80s and 90s.
So you go, I went in and I remember being like, it's going to be good. And then there's like scenes of dogs in hell being tortured. And I was like, oh God.
Oh baby, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was spooky.
Yeah.
So pet mummification was the best way that the ancient Egyptians had to achieve all dogs going to heaven. If a person died and had the money to be...
I'm sorry, you just said it like, to achieve operation, all dogs
operation,
go
all
to
dogs.
Heaven. We got to get these boys up to heaven.
Stat.
Move, move, move.
So if they had the money to be mummified themselves, they would also usually have the money to have their pets mummified along with them. Now, this did mean that a living pet would have to be killed before mummification.
Hmm.
Now, this process does seem pretty cruel to us today, and I don't want to get like, oh, whatever a culture did was fine because of how they understood it. But they kind of believed that it was like cryonics to us, which isn't making it any better for you. You're narrowing your eyes.
Yeah. Where are you going with this?
So they believed that if an animal was killed and then mummified, it would be in the afterlife a couple days later. Death was an inconvenience.
Right.
So, not advocating that these people killing animals was totally cool, but you can see how it made sense to them and how they would believe that this was a way to show ultimate care and, you know, love for their pets.
Right.
So here's a story of an Egyptian queen who was mummified with her favorite pet after she died.
When the tomb of Queen Matkar-Mutamhat was discovered, there was a small mummified bundle at her feet. This was initially believed to be her child. This puzzled archaeologists because the queen was a high priestess who had taken a serious vow of celibacy. If this had been her child, it would have meant that she had at some point broken the oath she had taken as high priestess, raising a slew of other questions regarding her life. Finally, in 1968, Egyptologists carried out an x-ray on the small mummy, and it was determined to be an adult monkey, not a child.
You think that was a letdown for them? Like they thought they had stumbled into like an ancient soap opera?
I feel like this opens up maybe a few more questions. Like, wow, pet monkey, huh? All right.
Why'd she like this monkey so much? It must have been pretty cool, I bet. It would be cool to have a pet monkey.
Maybe. I don't know. You hear stories like Travis the Chimp and just other animals that are not meant to be pets.
Yeah.
Being forced into situations where they're pets. It doesn't work out. Google Travis the Chimp. But brace yourself, because there's going to be a person with her face ripped off.
Oh, that was that one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you see like the videos of like the little tamarin monkeys in India who are just having like a good time and swinging around. And I think that would be cool for like a day. But then it would probably get kind of obnoxious.
They're great animals, but they should probably be left alone.
Yeah.
They probably don't need to be pets. Man, the monkeys, when I went to Cambodia, they were just mean motherfuckers.
They would like throw things at you?
Well, they sneak up on you and try to steal your shit. And if you come near them, they start like braying at you.
Oh, God.
They're bad. And they're vicious. Like, I wouldn't want to mess with one. If you see one, just let
how many?
Be.
So you're in Cambodia. How many were there? One a day? Or?
In the cities where we were most of the time, it was like not very many.
Sure.
But when we went to the temples, you know, Angkor Wat and whatnot, they're all over the place.
Oh,
they're
God.
They're just chilling. And yeah, they're cute. they look like friends that you want to pet and play with, but they're not.
They're not.
They're going to steal your wallet and bite your face off.
Oh, God. So thus far, Egyptologists have discovered mummies of cats, dogs, mongooses. Mongoosei? Mongooses.
Mongoose.
Mongoose. Crocodiles, monkeys, gazelles, and birds. So some of these mummifications were definitely for religious reasons. Birds were sacred. Cats were sacred.
See, birds are sacred, Max. See?
I am proven wrong. But most of the best preserved mummies we have been found to simply have been house pets. Like, there's tomb writings that's like, this was the beloved pet of Dorian.
Aww.
This is his nice cat. That's kind of sweet, you know?
Steve the cat.
It's kind of sweet that you would be able to have, like, that kind of connection to your pet after millennia.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
That's cool. Now, mummification is all well and good and sweet, but we've already covered it pretty significantly in our mummy episode. Go listen to it.
Mummies, dummies, and honey. Mummy.
Let's move into some territory that we haven't covered yet, but that could be considered the modern version of mummification, taxidermy. So I've got a few taxidermied things sitting around my house. I've got that, like, alligator head.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah, you have that magnificent deer, right?
Yeah, I was horrified of that. That was my uncle's.
Oh, yep.
And it hung up in his house when I was a kid. And it would, like, terrify me.
Yeah.
I hated it. I kind of view, like, my own story arc as being, like, that theory about the kid in Jurassic Park who got really scared of the Velociraptor claw. And then he turned into Chris Pratt in Jurassic World.
Oh, I didn't hear that theory. Interesting. Yeah.
It was really goofy, and no one took it seriously. And then the guy who played the kid in Jurassic Park came out and was like, no, he's his own character. Like, that's me. And it was like, come on, man.
Of course he did. So naturally that became canon. They're like, well, if you're going to throw a fit about it.
Yeah. It is.
That's Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Now how do you feel?
So anyway, here's a working definition of taxidermy for anyone who's unaware.
Taxidermy is the preserving of an animal's body via mounting over a framework or stuffing for the purpose of display or study. Animals are often, but not always, portrayed in a lifelike state. Taxidermy is practiced primarily on mammals, birds, fish, and reptiles, but can also be done to larger insects and arachnids. Taxidermy takes on a number of forms and purposes, including hunting trophies and natural history museum displays. Museums use taxidermy as a method to record species, including those that are extinct and threatened, in the form of study skins and life-size mounts.
So I know taxidermy can be a touchy subject sometimes, and I personally don't get down with, like, trophy hunting.
Right.
Which is ironic, because I do own that deer, but it's... It was, like, 1968, I think it was mounted. But, like, if I go into, like, a Cabela's, I feel kind of guilty.
Really?
But, yeah.
I feel like there's a way to do that that's sustainable and considerate of what's going on with the environment.
Yeah.
Like, deer are legitimately overpopulated here in the States.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to have a deer hunting season and keep it at that. But definitely the big game trophy...
No, that's weak.
There is no defensible stance on that.
Nah, don't go shoot an elephant.
No.
So modern taxidermy really started to come into being around the 1750s. Prior to that, I guess, like, stuff just sucked so bad that if you killed, like, a raccoon or something, you had to make a hat out of it, or else you'd freeze to death.
Yeah, sure.
There's no, you couldn't afford to stuff it.
Yeah, they didn't have Carhartt back then.
How did those hats work? With the tail? Like, was that a real tail?
You gotta kind of cut a circle, and then you have a strip that goes around so it makes a sort of cylindrical shape. And then the tail was purely aesthetic.
Okay, yeah, it was just fun.
I had one as a kid, and I loved it. And then I lost it. So I apparently didn't love it that much.
Was it real? Real raccoon?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool.
It kind of creeped me out, but I was like, oh, well, I'm an explorer.
Yeah. So as the field of biology developed into the 1850s, the art of taxidermy really began to take off. People taxidermied tons of animal species, primarily for ease of transport on ships. So, you know, you imagine you're Charles Darwin, and you're on the Beagle, and you're in the Galapagos, and you see this new animal you've never seen before.
Hmm.
You're like, wow, I really want to take this back to England to study it. but you can't just haul an animal carcass on a month-long ship journey.
It's
going to get stinky. And you also can't afford all the ice to keep it frozen the whole time. They didn't have Yeti coolers back then.
Ah, such a primitive time.
Savages. So if you saw a new or undiscovered animal, you wouldn't want it rotting, so you would skin it and mount it for study back home. That was the best solution they had.
Hmm.
And because of growing public interest in biology, a lot of those taxidermy bodies were put on public display. Here's a review of a taxidermy display from London's Great Exhibition in 1851.
The particular works created by John Hancock of Newcastle especially grabbed the attention of the judges. Hancock's works, such as his tableau of a falcon grappling with a heron, are unsurpassed in their quality and realism. A judge commented that they will go far towards raising the art of taxidermy to a level with other arts, which have hitherto held higher pretensions.
Yeah, so basically people started taking taxidermy really seriously.
High art.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they were stretching the bounds of what actually made sense. Like, people would taxidermy lions and tigers fighting each other, which doesn't make any sense, but people were like, oh, hell yeah.
That is pretty cool, to be honest.
Yeah. You remember that TV show that was like who would win in a fight? And it would just be like, would a rhino or an elephant win?
Yeah.
It was basically just that.
They didn't have Alien versus Predator there yet.
So. Yeah, they had to entertain themselves somehow.
This is the next best thing.
Unfortunately, after people started taking taxidermy really seriously and elevating it to a high art form, other people started taking taxidermy not so seriously. I think, out of everything that we've talked about so far, vultures picking skin off bodies, getting your head cut off and being frozen, just a lot of really gnarly stuff. The stuff we're about to talk about creeps me out the most. It's anthropomorphic taxidermy. This is where real sick freaks, just nasty people, taxidermy animals, and then dress them up in clothes to make them look like they're doing human things.
Oh no.
It's despicable. And one of history's greatest monsters was a particular pervert by the name of Walter Potter. I don't even want to talk about this guy. Can you read this?
I got this, bud.
Thank you for carrying me through this.
Walter Potter was the king of the anthropodermic taxidermy craze of the late 1800s. While satisfying the Victorian demand for traditional stuffed animals to earn a living, Potter began creating taxidermied dioramas, eventually displaying his works in a museum he opened on his property. Among his scenes were a rat's den being raided by the local police rats, and a village school featuring 48 rabbits busy writing on tiny slates. The kitten's tea party displayed feline etiquette and a game of croquet. His museum displayed a guinea pig's cricket match that was in progress, while 20 kittens attended a wedding, wearing little suits or dresses complete with a feline priest in white vests. Potter's attention to detail in these scenes was noted, to the extent that a visitor noted, "The kittens even wear frilly knickers under their formal attire."
It's absolutely sickening.
I'm very upset right now. You're going to show me a photo of this.
Yeah, it's horrible, dude. It's monster, like... it's gross. Like...
Oh, no!
These are all dead kittens that he has arranged sitting around a table with tiny little teacups. It grosses me out to a level that I...
Oh my god, the cat playing croquet is very... Oh, this is just very unnatural looking. This cat just kind of plastered into this position, holding a mallet, swinging it at a ball. Looking down, very concentrated, very Jack Nicklaus gaze at the task at hand.
I think the unsettling thing is that normally when you see a cat stand up, it's like, uh-oh, he's off balance. Oh, what's he doing? But this, the cat is like doing a thing. I don't like it at all.
Hovering on his hind legs. There's one in the back, like, reclining against the wall, watching, and just cross legs like a human. Like a human! These are not humans. They've been morphed and twisted into human shapes.
By history's greatest pervert, Walter Potter. I hate this guy. I can't imagine, like, doing this and being like, yeah, this is what I'm into.
Man, I'm coming full circle on this. I kind of appreciate this, Max. This is amazing. Look at all these tiny little plates. And look at the mural he painted on the wall to set the scene. It's like a little lake scene with flowers. There's craft in this.
Sure, yeah. There's craft. This is, to me, this is the same level as, like, Ed Gein making, like, face masks out of people.
It really does not make sense to me how bad a rap Ed Gein got while this guy was praised.
Yeah, seriously. And, like, by the Victorians, too.
Right.
Like, really stuck up people. And they're like, oh, look at all these dead cats sitting around.
Yeah, they were cool with this.
And people would, like, roll up and pay for this, too. Ugh.
I mean, I would pay to see this, to be honest.
No.
You wouldn't pay to see this?
No, absolutely not. It's horrible.
There's a traveling exhibition of Walter Potter's work. It's at the Columbus Museum of Art. It's free entry. You know what? It's free. Would you go?
No, absolutely not.
You would not.
It freaks me out so bad.
The morbid curiosity would not get the better of you. Wow.
Ugh.
I'd go in a heartbeat. I'd be really upset, too. This is very disturbing.
One of history's greatest monsters. I do not get down with this dude, and I don't want to talk about him anymore.
Okay.
What I do want to talk about,
though... You are
so
visibly shaken by this. This is amazing.
Yeah, I did not like looking at this.
Man.
What I do want to talk about, though, is a dude whose taxidermy I'm totally okay with, even though it's arguably more disturbing than Walter Potter's. Have you ever heard of Bart Janssen?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard of the Orville Copter?
No, I don't think so.
Dude, this stuff rules. Look at it.
Oh, I've seen this. This taxidermied cat turned into a helicopter drone?
Yeah.
Oh my god. This is so savage.
So here's an excerpt from an article on maybe the raddest dude on the planet.
Bart Janssen, a Dutch artist, has always been interested in and rather passionate about flying and aeronautics in general. This passion influenced his life significantly, so much so that he named his cat Orville after the famous American aviator Orville Wright. The cat was playful, loving, and affectionate, until one day when tragedy struck. Orville was hit by a car and killed. However, the young artist did not want to part with his pet so easily. After the pet was declared dead, the artist decided to have his pet stuffed, which is not something that uncommon. However, the young Dutch artist took it a few steps further by turning his stuffed cat into a quadrocopter drone. The cat has been stuffed in a horizontal position, with the limbs positioned at the same angles as the drone propeller arms. The abdomen is shaped in such a way that it accommodates the body of the drone. An opening was cut into the abdomen and the ends of the limbs, which allowed for the drone to be assembled. The arms of the drone are concealed by the limbs of the cat, with only the propellers sticking out of its paws. The body is concealed by the abdomen of the cat with the opening still present, providing access to the body and battery of the drone.
Yeah, so basically, if you imagine, like, the Vitruvian Man, the Da Vinci one, but imagine that that's a cat.
Oh, God.
Just in a big X. And also it's got propellers coming out of its paws.
It's also staring forward, yeah. Which I really appreciate that it's onward. You know?
It's like pursuing you.
Yeah. This would be the single scariest thing to be chased by, I think.
Have you seen the video of it flying lately?
No, I have not.
It's really good. Check it.
No. How did they do this and not just think that this is
a crime?
Like, completely silly. Skydiving cat causes uproar. I am saving that for later.
Add to playlist.
Yeah.
So it is pretty silly. And I think my favorite part is that the cat's tail is also sticking straight out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of favorite things I have about this, but the tail's pretty good.
That's so wild.
I've done, like, underwater ROV building before.
ROV building, what is that?
Like, remote operated vehicle.
Oh, okay.
Where I've built, like, little things that go around underwater that you control.
Yeah, sure.
And it's difficult because you have to balance it really well to be, like, neutrally buoyant, and so it won't, like, just tilt back the whole time.
Yeah.
And air is a fluid, too, so the principles are the same. But I can't imagine how difficult it would have been to balance the weight on a cat.
Yeah.
To get it not to just flip over.
I wonder if the drone just weighs more than however much cat they put on the drone.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's probably the counterbalance. They're like, oh, we can do this. This drone's heavy as hell.
The drone is just central. Yeah.
Orville's not heavy. He was a slim boy.
It's a cat.
Wow.
So naturally, reviews were mixed. The comments section of the video is gold.
If I was the cat, I wouldn't wish they did that to my dead corpse. If you really intend to pay tribute to your cat, you would have done something for him, not turn him into a pointless toy. A cat's greatest goal is not to fly with birds. You just made up that nonsense. Okay, people, let's stop and think for a second. Turning a dead cat into a helicopter is definitely unusual, yes, but I don't get why it's garnering so much hate. The cat was hit by a car and died. Turning him into a helicopter didn't hurt him because he was already dead. This being the case, the most important thing to consider is not that it was done, but why it was done.
That sentence, turning him into a helicopter didn't hurt him because he was already dead, might be like my new Twitter bio. I think that's very funny.
You should change it to that.
Now, I don't know exactly where I fall on this. I certainly don't think I would do it to any of the dogs my parents have owned.
No, not I. Yeah, I could never do this. This guy's actually kind of a hero in that regard.
Yeah.
He did what I don't think most of us have the fortitude to do.
And he's also soldiered on in the face of a lot of backlash. And this criticism hasn't really slowed him down much at all. Maybe you should look at this other thing that he's built.
Globe. Are you fucking kidding me? He made an ostrich copter?
Uh-huh.
No! Oh, it's having a hell of a time getting up off the ground. It's not gonna make it, is it? It's flying. The fucking ostrich is flying. That's horrid. Did you see the description here?
Uh-uh.
The world's first flying ostrich. Ostrich copter, half ostrich, half helicopter. This must be its wildest dream, to be able to fly and finally escape them untrustworthy wildebeests.
This guy does a lot of assuming what animals want, which is very funny.
Good lord.
But he made, like, this is a full-size ostrich, I assume. I don't know how
big it is. It looks like it.
It's big.
Yeah.
And it's just got four propellers sticking out of it, and it just kind of flies around in the air.
And its neck is completely erect, looking forward.
Yeah.
And its legs are just completely stiff the opposite direction, and it isn't fully prone.
In, like, flight mode, like how you would see a bird flying, it's really good. This guy has also done a shark that flew.
No.
He did a badger that swims around in the water, and he did a rat, too. This is a sweet story. The rat was sent to him because there was a kid who had a pet rat.
Okay.
And the pet rat had to be put down because of cancer.
Hmm.
But the kid who owned it, like, saw the video of the Orville copter, the cat copter,
yeah,
in school, and was like, you know, I want my rat turned into that. So this artist was like, yeah, sure, this is cool. And he took this kid's rat and made it into a drone, which flies around.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, he's doing God's work out there. That's very
so
cool.
Weird and so pure.
Like, if these two kindred spirits could come together to make some, like, weird kid's dream come true. Like, this kid was already a rat kid, and, like, I've had pet rats, and I get the stigma that comes with it.
Okay.
But this kid was a rat kid, and then he got to make his rat into a drone. It's rad.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. As cool as this guy is, not all artists are using taxidermy to create fond memories. Some just do it to make a quick buck. I'm sure you've seen the Fiji Mermaid at some point.
I'm not sure.
Have you seen House of a Thousand Corpses?
Yes.
That's what Rainn Wilson gets turned into.
Oh, okay.
Dwight? Yeah. That was a real life thing. Here's a photo of it. It is spooky.
Wow. What the fuck? That is freaky. So it's kind of, it's got the butt of a fish.
Uh-huh.
And kind of a rib cage and these very weird small arms and a big head with a gaping mouth.
Yeah.
Appears to just be screaming.
Yeah.
I imagine it's screaming.
So the Fiji Mermaid was a taxidermied creation that, as you said, was the bottom half of a fish and the top half of a monkey.
Oh, okay.
That they split in half and sewed together. And they would, like, swap out the monkey's teeth so it had, like, people teeth and looked a little more human.
Yeah.
But this was a thing that P.T. Barnum was a big fan of. He would travel the Fiji Mermaid around to sideshows and circuses as proof of real-life mermaids. And he would make bank off of it.
Right.
So, again, 1800s people get a bad rap sometimes, but Barnum was making money off of people who were like, oh, hell yeah, a mermaid. This is awesome. But he did it because he was a great salesman. So here's an ad from the January 1843 edition of the Charleston Courier advertising the Fiji Mermaid Show.
Fiji Mermaid to be shown in Pomona Arts Colony. The infamous Fiji Mermaid discovered in foreign lands this summer by renowned adventurous Professor R. Tursiart is to be displayed publicly at the Eve Gallery located within Pomona's Art Colony for the month of October. Spooky. It has currently only been shown to a selection of naturalists and other scientific persons whose previous doubts of the existence of such an astonishing creature were entirely removed. The mermaid is described as petite, with pendulous breasts. Opening night will be this Saturday, October 8th, with the specimen on display for the remainder of the month. That's good sales.
Yeah. Like, they're just kind of playing up the, like, sexy, ooh, I'm going to crash my boat into these rocks because I'm so distracted by these beautiful mermaids. Like, that angle. They really played it up.
With, yeah.
Like,
any description of pendulous breasts cracks me up because that's never something you would hear anybody say today.
No,
it's because
the most,
just sounds like an outdated, horny dude statement.
It's the most 1850s thing ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've seen the real Fiji mermaid. You can understand why folks were upset when they would arrive at these exhibits and find, like, a weird, burned, half-fish, half-monkey thing.
I do not see any pendulous breasts here. That would be that would be a little misleading, I think.
Luckily, in honor of these people who are very upset, we do have a negative review of the show here for you.
Hundreds of spectators lined up opening night to finally catch a glimpse of the Fiji mermaid. The curious half-fish, half-human is currently on display in Pomona's Eve Gallery for the month of October. The public expected far more than they received. To call the mermaid hideous would be a compliment. One viewer, Cherie Savoy, who traveled all the way from Claremont, had this to say, quote, I love mermaids. I even have a painting of one, so of course I jumped at the opportunity to see the real deal. But it was a horrid little green thing. The mouth was wide open and the teeth bared as if the creature had been snarling in its death rattle.
To her credit, she nailed it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I don't know why we bothered recording me describing the mermaid. When we could have just read this, because this is a spot-on description. This thing is fucking hideous.
Yeah. It seriously looks like you took... It looks like you took a monkey and sewed it to a fish and then burned it really bad.
Yeah, you left it in the oven too long.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of the folks who went to these sideshows knew that it was kind of a grift. You know, they weren't as dumb as we like to make them out to be. But I also think it's very funny that this very sweet woman went and was like, I was really excited to see a mermaid and did not get what I paid for.
Nope.
So, Dorian, after all of the mummification, taxidermy, scamming, helicoptering, all this stuff folks have done with dead animals, I have one more quick banger for you involving horse skulls. So apparently, the Irish were big fans of using horse skulls for acoustic amplification. Horse skulls were commonly buried under dance floors, and coins were occasionally placed in them so that stomping, like Riverdance style, you know, stomping and clattering around,
yeah,
so that that would be amplified.
Sean O'Sullivan, archivist at the Irish Folklore Commission, first linked the practice with the idea of improving acoustics in his survey article, Foundation Sacrifices, published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Antiquaries of Ireland in 1945. Quote, "I used to hear the old people say that it was put there for the purpose of giving a fine hearty echo to the house when people would be talking or walking inside the house. But particularly, they put the head in the floor so that their dancing would sound better, for the old people were all for sport. An account of County Wexford reported that skulls were placed beneath church altars to help the preacher to be heard all over the church. In some churches, up to 20 of these heads were buried together."
And you can see how that makes sense.
That's it.
It's a big hollow cavity, and it would echo and amplify a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
It makes more sense to put in your floor to make dancing louder and to make a room sound more full.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's a little podcasting tip we could try out. If we ever feel like we're being too quiet or something and we want to be louder, we can just get some big horse skulls and, like, talk into them.
Yeah.
Really blast it out there.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, wait. Do I really need to be louder than I already am? I'm not sure if that's a good idea.
Well, with a horse skull, you can.
Could you imagine how many more people would go to church, too, if there were just horse skulls covering every square inch of the walls in the building?
That would be super cool.
I'd be more inclined to check out a church if that were the case.
You gotta have some, like, candles, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Candles, horse skulls. Let's do it.
Let's open one.
Awesome. Well, this was very weird. A lot of weird stuff you've been chucking my way here, Max. I don't know what to do with all these images I've seen and
catcopters and
perverted stories you're telling me. These abominations. Hey, if you're listening to this, just leave animals alone, all right? Unless you're actually a taxidermist. I wonder, do we have any taxidermist listeners? Like, I know we have funeral workers and, like...
Yeah.
If you work in taxidermy, if you have opinions about taxidermy or any of that stuff, we'd love hearing from you. Message us on social media. We're at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. Just tell us what you think of all of this real weird shit that Max just kind of plopped in our laps today. If you want to support the podcast, there's a few ways you can do that. You can tell a friend about this. We don't advertise. We just kind of rely on word of mouth.
Yeah.
That'd be tight if you told your friends and family. And hey, if you're going to go to Christmas,
maybe ruin Christmas.
Of some kind, yeah, ruin Christmas by being like, hey, Mom, listen to this podcast about death and them freezing bodies and doing just real weird shit with animals. Go ahead and listen to this. That's the best way to advertise. Just really freak people out.
Yeah.
You could also tip us $3 or more at ko-fi.com/predeadboys. We got another donation from our boy, Anaconda Vice.
Really?
A.K.A. Drew.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, he says, he kind of clarified the situation. I was like, what is he, a wrestler, a SoundCloud rapper? What's the deal?
Okay.
He says, what's up, Dorian and Max? LOL.
What's up?
I'm not a rapper, not a wrestler, but Anaconda Vice was just a nickname because I'm a big wrestling fan and a gamer. CM Punk's move, indeed. Also, fuck DP Doe, shit's gross. That's true. These are facts. I'm glad that despite living in different parts of the world, we can come together over the fact that this chain restaurant of greasy filth is just not good.
It's bad.
It's a destroyer of digestive systems, and it should be avoided at all costs.
I think the issue with a calzone is that you can't split it. Like, they're very difficult to share.
Yeah, I guess if you bring a fork and knife into the situation, but then again, like, why not just get pizza where you don't have to do that?
Yeah, just get pizza.
Just get pizza. Stop complicating it. Anyway, Drew also sent us a very sweet email. Remind me to show that to you
if you haven't
seen it. But thanks for all the love, man. We really appreciate
it. Thank you, Drew.
And this recent donation makes him the number one supporter on our Ko-fi page. he edged out your brother.
Uh-oh.
And is now our top supporter.
Coming at you, Jacob.
Yeah, so sorry, Jacob. You've been bested. And thank you so much, Drew. But yeah, check out the ko-fi.com/predeadboys if you want to give Drew a run for his money. But watch out, because he's going to hit you with the Anaconda Vice.
Woo, brother!
Woo! Anyway, thanks so much, Drew. We also got some iTunes reviews. If you go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and leave us a 5-star review, we will read it on an episode.
It's free advertising.
That's a fucking promise. We got 2 to read here.
Double Down.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that sandwich? I don't want to talk about that sandwich.
I really like the concept of the Double Down. I did not think it was very
execution
good.
Bad.
Yes. But I am all for experimentation of replacing buns with fried foods or other finger foods. I think that's a good concept. That's a legit good concept, Max. You showed me awful things today, like a half monkey, half fish sewn together and overcooked. And you're going to look at me and tell me that a fried chicken sandwich with no bun is a bad idea. You can get out.
I ate it. It was fine. It was a little bland. But
yeah, that was the thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got these reviews. The first one is from C. Mitten. I know this guy. It's Corey Mittens. Thanks very much, man. He says, 2 very good boys. 5 stars. Like Car Talk, but with death. That's what we aim for.
That is. That's when we sat down and worked out the concept. It was like, hey, like Car Talk.
You know Car Talk? Well, what if we had more animal mummification and weird vampire myths?
Hey, you know that one Car Talk episode where they had to pull a dead deer out of the inside of a car? Remember that one? Let's do that one. That's my favorite episode.
This is a spinoff podcast of Car Talk. So thanks for noticing that. And thanks for the kind words, man. The next review is from Satan Man. I say that because it's got 3 N's at the end.
Okay. Not Mr. Satan from Dragon Ball Z.
No, not Mr. Satan. Not the father-in-law of Gohan. That's real weeaboo shit for you. Satan Man says,
woo!
5 stars. Thanks for the great podcast, boys. You guys have great commentary and manage to be enjoyable each and every episode. That's very sweet of you.
Yeah,
thanks.
It's very kind.
Thank you, Satan Man. It's very sweet. I just want to say, too, like Max said at the top of the episode, this is our last episode of 2018, our inaugural year as a podcast. And this has been a total treat. This has been awesome.
Just
being able to talk about this stuff. And I come over to Max's house and learn about all kinds of funky, weird stuff about death. And then to hear people enjoy it from all over the place and just to see your guys' messages and the things that you find interesting from the episodes. It's all been really, really cool. And we really appreciate you making just, you know, you can say what you will about 2018 on the whole, but I know that for both of us, it's been kind of a special year at the very least, partially because of this podcast. So thank you all for making that happen.
Yeah. I genuinely like, you know, sometimes it's tough to feel like the things that you make aren't cool or good enough, but it's neat to be able to look at, you know, like the numbers don't mean anything. I would be doing this without it, but it's cool to think that people are like, yes, 500 people took an hour of their time and listened to this thing I put out. You know, X amount of people cared about this much. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much for helping us do this weird thing.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah. Hopefully we're going to just keep on trucking into 2019 and do more cool shit for you.
Yeah.
Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by Brat Curse. They got a new music video called Colored by Paranoia. It's on YouTube. You should look that up. You should check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com. Love them bunches. They're great. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays. I hope that you get some really weird taxidermy for Christmas this year. What's the weirdest, like if you could smash 2 animals together to form some kind of fucked up taxidermy, what would it be?
Maybe like, well, no, that's just a centaur.
A centaur wouldn't be bad. That's very freaky.
That might be a crime.
It would.
maybe like an alligator and then a deer. So it's like this really spindly, graceful thing in the front. And then the back half is just like all wiggly and chunky.
I like that. I thought about how interesting it would be. And you're going to hate this. If you took a small bird and put crab legs on it. Oh, God. Like, what if you took a cardinal and put crab legs and little crab claws on it?
Ooh. Because not only would the bird part unsettle me, but the crab part would kill me.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remembered that.
And I have a shellfish allergy. It would kill me.
This is your nightmare. I'm gonna go build this and give it to you for Christmas. Max and Dorian here, reminding you, you're gonna rot. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Wish I had some bells to jingle.
Jing, 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 jing. I'll edit some sleigh bells in.
Who's that up on the rooftop? Oh, it's all the rats that live in my ceiling. Hello.
You got notes for me?
Yeah, I should probably put them in the folder, huh? Yeah, you can't hack.
No, I can't hack. What is this? The film Hackers?
The film Swordfish?
The house that we stayed at when we went to the beach this year?
Yeah.
Had a shrink-wrapped DVD copy of Swordfish. Just kind of cracked me up. They were like, somebody will probably want to watch it. But I like the idea that nobody bothered. And there's clear evidence that nobody's going to bother to watch this movie.
It's not the worst movie that's ever been made.
Really?
It's not terrible.
Like, the only reason that movie got any press at all was because of the Halle Berry nudity.
Yeah.
So I have to assume that if that's the best thing that somebody can say about a movie, then there probably isn't much good in the movie. But you liked it.
And it's fine. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen.
Okay.
I don't know.
I actually believe that. I was kind of thinking about you and how you have this thing, this kind of weird quality where you will hate something completely with all of your being, but what you will say to your friends is, oh, dude, I fucking love that. I fucking love Train. I fucking love Minions. And I think that quietly inside you're dying and you don't want these things to be part of your life, but the way that you deal with it is just by willing yourself to try to like them or try to get some kind of fun. Just harvest
That's
some
what
kind
it is.
Of
I have
fun
to play
for
with
Minions.
It. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have to like, because if I just hate it, then my soul is so consumed with hate.
Right.
It sucks. But if I'm like, oh, I fucking love Minions, and then populate my feed with really dumb Minions.
Yeah, you get that PMA going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a positive spin on the thing you hate.
Yeah.
That drives you crazy.
Yeah, so I did that with Always I don't feel that way about Swordfish.
Okay.
Swordfish is like it's a fine movie. It's like a C. It's the most C movie ever.
Yeah. As in, don't see it!
Don't.